This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Third down and 10 from the Houston 25. Cooks, short side right. Deshaun takes the snap. Pass rush ferocious. Watson escapes, throws downfield, and he's got a man. QT cuts inside, 30, 25, 20, 15, and QT is wrapped up inside the 11-yard line. That pass rush was all over Watson, but he escaped and hit QT for a big play. The tackle by Wilson, first down at the 11 for the Texans.
That was a huge, huge play early in the game. That was Watson escaping pressure and hitting a wide-open Kiki QT for 64 yards down the field. I think the very next play, if not two plays later, Deshaun on a design run into the end zone for a touchdown. And the Texans, one of the weird things about this the last month and a half is that the defense has played better, but they've been awful on opening drives for opposing teams. They've given up points on opening drives in six straight games, and most of those have been touchdowns. The cool thing about the last 2 weeks, Seth, is that the Texans have punched back. You know, J.J. with the pick six was a real momentum swing. And that play right there, that was a game yesterday that felt early on like, oh, okay, this is not Detroit or New England that you're trying to come back against here. This is a team that's probably angry having lost to the Titans a week before, that's been a good team all year, that's going to be tough to get points against. They went right down on the field on you and scored on their opening drive. You went three and out on your opening drive. That was a huge play early in the game for Deshaun and Kiki QT right there.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the slow starts and with the defense especially. I think that's one thing Anthony Weaver has done a good job of. They've taken some body blows early in games multiple times and then turned around and been all right afterwards. And yesterday, the thing that really concerned me early on was that first Jonathan Taylor run where he carried the pile like 12 yards. That looked really bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I don't think I blame scheme on that. Guys just weren't physically ready to play. But the other thing that we saw, I don't know if you noticed or not, but T.Y. Hilton was kind of going off in the first half, Sean.
I choose to remember the second half in which he had one catch for 10 yards.
Right,
choose to remember.
So, Weave's been around long enough. He understands our issues with T.Y. Hilton.
Yes.
I can't remember. T.Y. Hilton wasn't playing back when.
No, 2012. Playing,
okay.
2012.
You can't have Philip Gaines trying to cover, you know, T.Y. Hilton all over the yard, apparently. And, they learned that after the first quarter. They did some things in the second half where I think they did a better job disguising their coverages. At times, safeties and linebackers were bailing out on blitzes, like at the snap. They did some things that were a little bit riskier, but it worked out really well. And the Colts offense didn't score any points in the second half. I don't know what it is at this point. I mean, and I know coaches get this way too when they have slow starts on their team. You've got theories about what it is, but my God. I mean, 11 out of 12 opening drives you've punted this season on offense. On defense, what was the stat you told me? They give up 9 yards per play on
The last six opening drives by opposing offenses, they give up 9.1 yards per play, the Texans do, which would be far and away the worst defenses in the league over the course of a season give up about 6.5 yards per play. They're giving up 9.1. The rest of the game, the last six games, are giving up 5.3 yards per play, which would be a top 10 defense. It's just, it's crazy the Jekyll and Hyde that both sides of the ball have for this team early in games. And that, Seth, that unfortunately, that's coaching, man. Like, that's preparation. Yeah. That's how ready you are to go.
Well, and that's where, again, it's a double-edged sword, because I will give total and genuine praise to Weaver for making the adjustments. And I guess maybe that's where inexperience plays in a little bit is, you know, there are two parts of coaching. There's the whole week you spend game planning, and then usually the harder part is making your adjustments when you realize, okay, this part of my plan's going to work. Okay, they've countered this part of my plan. That's where you really earn your paycheck. So maybe Weaver at this point still doesn't necessarily do a great job of assessing, okay, what can my guys do? Do I trust Phillip Gaines a little too much?
Right.
Do I think Vernon Hargreaves is better than I am? He shouldn't have to learn that lesson over and over again. But at the same time, he is dealing with Phillip Gaines, Vernon Hargreaves, Eric Murray. These are the guys that he's dealing with that he's got to try to make the best of.
We'll talk more about Weaver a little later on this hour. The answer to the most important question going into yesterday's game, and something that I said Texan fans should be thrilled about, is we got the answer. Deshaun Watson was able to move the football up and down the field, at least for the first half. The second half wasn't quite as good, but when it mattered at the end of the game, he put the Texans in position to win until Nick Martin couldn't snap a football to him. With Chad Hansen and Kiki QT as the two guys getting the lion's share of the catches. Brandon Cooks had a good game as well while he was in there. But Kiki QT and Chad Hansen both went over 100 yards. Here's Deshaun on what he did to put more confidence in his guys after Will Fuller was suspended this week.
Just talk to him. And I mean, that's the biggest thing. For me, as a confidence guy, they already know whenever they step on the field, regardless if it's practice, if it's a game, you know, I'm going to treat you like a starter. I'm not trying to target just one person. You know, whoever's open, I'm going through my reads, being that quarterback, and just, you know, I'm going to give you an opportunity to make a play. And for me, I expect you to make that play just like they expect me to make every throw and every play. So, you know, that's the standard. And those guys, you know, they were up for the challenge and ready for that standard. So, you know, that's why they had big games.
Yeah, of course, when the Texans went into the season with Will Fuller, Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, and Kenny Stills as their top four wide receivers, and someone came to you and said, you know, in week 13, they're going to have two guys go over 100 yards in the same game against one of the best defenses in football, naturally you would have said, oh, of course, it'll be Kiki QT and Chad Hansen. Why not? But Kiki, 8 catches, 141. Chad Hansen, 5 catches for 101 yards. Seth, I guess, you know, there's 4 games left in the season. This Will Fuller thing is going to be a bit of a this is going to be something for the next GM to hash out. How much of the evaluation of whether or not you pay Will Fuller, which obviously there's a lot of elements to that. You know, the PED suspension, how much of that had to do with his health? How healthy does he stay going forward? What's the market going to be for Will Fuller? Are teams going to overpay for him? They just moved the ball for about 350 yards against one of the best defenses in football. Probably the best defense they're going to see the rest of the year, and they'll see him again in 2 weeks in Indianapolis. But if Deshaun continues to play at this level with largely backup quality wide receivers, or at least guys who've been backups plus Brandon Cooks, how much does that factor into the calculus for the next general manager as to whether or not to pay Will Fuller $15 million?
I think it factors in a lot. And maybe with or without this production from Kiki QT or Chad Hansen, it's not like a new GM is going to come in and say, hey, Chad Hansen's just as good as Will Fuller. I think that what he's going to do is come in and probably already know and feel that Deshaun Watson can do more than he already has so far with better consistency and better coaching. And I think he's going to look at situations like Green Bay or various other places where, look, you don't have to spend your way to glory with your receiving core if you've got a good quarterback. You can find really good values in the second rounds and later, and maybe spend wisely, and you already do have, look, you're probably going to have Brandon Cooks' contract is workable, and I think that somehow, I don't know how the hell he made his way through the concussion protocol yesterday, Sean, because he looked like he was knocked TF out. Did he not?
Yeah.
I don't know. All right.
Here's the thing.
I don't know, like a hefty dose of spelling salts or something?
Then my theory on this is he's been concussed enough the last 2 years to where if he has any of his faculties, he knows how exactly to carry himself as he jogs off to protocol. You know
but
what
that's
I mean?
But the protocol has nothing to do with that. Your theory is only halfway right. I think the theory needs to be because he's had a bunch of concussions, his baseline testing at the beginning of the season is already so bad that when he gets a concussion,
he's fine.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if we'll have enough time for it today, but I will defend the officials on that call, that was an interception.
Oh, the pick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were really upset about that, but I mean, that was pretty simple. For that to be a catch, he has to survive the ground. And since he almost literally didn't survive the ground, like he almost died out there, Sean.
Yes, true.
It wasn't a catch, but the ball hadn't touched the ground yet. So with no catch, it's a live ball.
Yeah.
So it ends up being an interception. It feels dirty and low down and no good, but I mean, it was a pretty clear cut interpretation right there.
Yeah. The other take I saw on that play from a lot of people was, well, that stinks for Deshaun's streak of interceptionless throws. You know, it was 200 and something throws consecutively. He'd gone without an interception. Like, well, that kind of stinks that it winds up on a play like that where Brandon Cooks really, he had the ball and then he didn't have the ball as a catchable ball. My response to that was, Deshaun, as good as he played yesterday,
he had three or four
Seth, that could have been picked. He had three or four throws. You know, those are just sort of the things that sort of balance out in the end. While the actual interception that the Colts got was probably not Deshaun's fault, there were three or four balls he had thrown before that that at least one of them probably should have been picked off in that game. So those things tend to even out over time.
But I do think, Sean, to get back to your original point, this was a really good game for, hey, where are the Texans on the GM and head coach enticing factor? Like, how enticing is this job to a GM and a head coach? And, man, I'll tell you what, I was watching the Broncos-Chiefs game last night in Spanish, because I'm gonna try to learn Spanish that way by watching the Spanish broadcast whenever I can. What the hell's this quesadilla? Yes.
Someday Seth will learn how to pronounce quesadilla, yes.
But man, put yourself in Vic Fangio's shoes. We were Vic Fangio, almost did the impossible, almost upended the team. They're like, oh, how's anybody going to ever beat the Chiefs? Except that he didn't trust his offense and his quarterback enough to go for it on fourth down in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And now he's getting crushed after otherwise coaching great. Would you rather, if you're looking at coaching positions, just always remember the position that Vic Fangio is in right now, because he doesn't have a Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
All of your best laid plans, all of your brilliance on defense, it just doesn't matter if you don't have the quarterback.
It sucked losing yesterday, but watching Deshaun do what he did with replacement receivers was really, big picture, really, really encouraging. All right, J.J. Watt had a good game yesterday, too. He's been resurgent lately. How are potential GMs viewing J.J. Watt's play of late? We will explain next.
On second and 11 at the Houston 44, Rivers in the gun. Here's the snap. Rivers with a little time. Here comes Watt, and Watt sacks Rivers. JJ brings him down in Colts territory.
Yeah, I mean, it's very tough and very frustrating, obviously. But our offense has done a great job many times in bailing us out on defense. So, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say anything about our offense. I think that the situations have been flipped many times. So, I know those guys feel bad about what happened, obviously. Wish they could have it back. And I know how that feels. And we all wish we had that win, obviously.
That's J.J. Watt talking about yesterday's game. It's been good watching J.J. kind of be resurgent here over the last 3 weeks. I think even more than that, Seth, it's been kind of good to see J.J. Watt just not just making plays, but celebrating with his teammates again. You know, remember earlier in the year, I forget what game it was. It was when things were death spiraling out of control, and J.J. made a play late in some, might have been the Packer game, made a play late in some game, and a couple of the teammates are running over to headbutt him and dap him up, and J.J.'s like, we're losing by 20, guys. You know what I mean? And it's been really good to see the defense, aside from opening drives, which have been terrible, but for the remainder of these games, they've played well as a defense. And the cool thing about yesterday, not just J.J., who had four TFLs, he had that sack that you just heard, the Colts had five possessions in the second half other than just taking the knee at the end of the game. They had five real possessions in the second half. The defense made plays to get off the field. The first three sacks got them off the field on all three. J.J. Watt, sack. A.J. Moore, safety blitz, sack. Jacob Martin, off the edge, using his hands.
Yeah.
Sack,
yeah.
Really good play.
Yeah.
And then the next possession they got off the field on fourth down. Frank Reich going for it on fourth and short in deep in the Texans' end of the field. And Tyrell Adams and Zach Cunningham fill that hole, and they stymie. I think it was Hines that they were running the ball with up the middle on fourth down. Thank God they ran the ball up the middle with a small back. So those four plays, and then I think the fifth possession was the one where there was a holding penalty. They got him into third and 18, and then they give up a screen pass. They get off the field. got the ball back for Deshaun, who then put them in position to win, and then Nick Martin happened. So the defense did some really good things in the second half of that football game, and J.J. Watt made a ton of plays to set all that up. That's been really good to see. I'm of the same mind as you, man. I want J.J. Watt to be here. I want this thing to turn around with a new head coach and a new GM, and there to be a really happy chapter at the end of the J.J. Watt saga here. My concern's probably too big a word, because I want what's best for the Texans. I do wonder how potential GMs are watching J.J. Watt these last three games, and if it carries into the next four games. If he keeps playing this level of J.J. Watt, is not quite Defensive Player of the Year J.J. Watt, but it's definitely 2018 J.J. Watt, which was good enough to be All-Pro the last three games. I wonder if GMs, potential GMs, are looking at J.J. going, that's a big piece of what we can do in 2021, or are they looking at J.J. Watt going, man, he may play himself into where he's worth a high second or a first rounder here if he keeps playing this way.
I don't think – I guess that all depends on how much of a turnaround that GM thinks that the Texans
right.
need. Like, how close are they?
Yes.
And I do think that just because of Deshaun Watson, they're way closer than a lot of people feel. People are starting to come around to that. They're starting to understand, all right, if you look at the Colts and the Texans and the overall talent level on their rosters, it's really – it's not that much different. And I'm not trying to dress up a pig or anything when I say that. You could say this about most good teams versus bad teams in the NFL. The amount is usually one or two playmakers at the top, and your worst several players are worse than that good team's worst several players. So it's this team, because you have a quarterback, it just needs some tweaking. Now, and you've got some massaging of the salary cap to do. That's the other part of it, is that, how flexible can you be? How aggressive can you be in free agency? That's where it might take a year or two. I think that, but that's going to come around, right? You don't have to tank to get cap space. You don't have to try to clear the decks and get better or get worse for 1 year before you get better. The cap space will come back around. Right now, if I were a GM and I were evaluating the team, I'm going to look at each defensive series and say, all right, why, what got them off the field? You know, and I do that. That's kind of like when I go through the series during the game, I try to kind of define, like, all right, who's the villain? Who's the hero here? Nick Martin, Max Sharping, for instance, single-handedly killed the first series for the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
Two awful plays in a row. He was the villain on that play. There were, I think probably, I didn't go through and count up yesterday, I think at least three series yesterday where J.J. Watt got them off the field. You know, so out of 12 series in a football game, if you've got a guy that's getting them off the field 25 to 33% of the time, that's pretty damn valuable.
It's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, that's what, so like usually if a guy gets a tackle for a loss and then that ends up being the last set of downs, I'll give that guy credit for it. So J.J. has four tackles for a loss in that game. He has a... He disrupts the end around that helped Justin Reed make a play. I'll give JJ and Justin equal credit on that one. Unfortunately, they scored the next down, but for all intents and purposes, JJ got the stop on a third and one. He's a huge impact player, right? Is he Defensive Player of the Year anymore? No, his brother's got that handled.
Right.
But he's still the most valuable guy in terms of how often he's getting the defense off the field. And yeah, I don't think you can just part ways with that. You're going to be a worse defense without it.
No question. No question about that. What advice would you give him about his new celebration for his
Was he sipping tea?
He was.
Is that what that was?
He was.
Okay.
And someone pointed out to me that there, if you go to his, it was either his Twitter or his Instagram, probably both.
In the morning on his way in to the game.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a mug in his hand all the time. And I don't know if it's tea or if it's coffee. But he's got a mug in his hand.
Maybe he's going to start marketing some kind of beverage. I know you're sipping the tea as in like, yeah, I hear what you're all saying and everything. But just like The Rock, who I can't follow The Rock on Instagram anymore. Every single damn post of his is about his tequila brand.
Here,
I think JJ's about to start a tea brand.
A tea brand? Okay, well, here would be my advice to JJ Watt about that particular celebration. In this age that we live in where images are everything, right? Visual images captured are everything. Unfortunately, that tea sipping thing that he did is something that if you freeze frame it, it makes it look like he's smoking a joint.
Yeah, but who does that anymore?
Which is what?
it's all about the vaping and the edibles these days.
Well,
I don't know
just
if the kids
saying,
would even know. Like, people are like, yeah.
JJ,
the only people are going to even know that it was there's such a thing as a joint are all
people,
too old to be impressionable.
Right. No, they're all people whose kids buy Reebok sneakers, and they're going to be like, I don't know if I want my kids buying the sneakers of that dope head J.J. Watt. Look at
those
him.
People got to understand that J.J.'s not being a bad influence in anybody except 30 years old and older. Mm. They just, you know, so got people who have already either made their decisions or been corrupted or discovered marijuana or whatever. Yeah, he's fine. He's fine. It did. My first thought was like, oh, damn, he wants Steph Curry on us. Because remember Steph Curry? The little shot of him acting like he was smoking a joint on the bench there.
Yeah,
but he didn't. It was it was tea sipping.
That is not on brand for JJ. Wow.
My first thought was because you know I'm very obsessed with myself. Mm. Was that I had tweeted out something where when I asked like, man, I wonder if any of these other guys were seeing. The medical professional that Will Fuller and Bradley Roby were. And underneath it, I did an image of that guy drinking the Ocean Spray cranberry juice on his longboard,
right.
On his skateboard. And I kind of meant it as like a double meaning, kind of like a sipping tea, but also like cleansing your kidneys out. So I was like, oh, I hope JJ didn't think I was accusing like him of going to that medical professional.
Right, right, right.
If he did think that, I don't think he would try to call attention to it.
No, no.
You know, that wouldn't be like, hey, Seth, look, I didn't even need the PEDs for this.
Are you still going to get on a Zoom call this week and ask him about ballooning up to 330 pounds, or did them losing the way they did yesterday take some of the starch out of that?
No. He'd be cool about it. He would take it the right way. Yeah. Except I'm getting tired of being the guy that asks the goofy question.
Well,
in the
I knew you would get tired. Damn.
Yeah, I don't like this shtick of mine. We're like, oh, here's big goofy Seth. I am the one that asked Will Fuller 2-3 days before he was popped for PEDs. I am the one that asked him about whether his regimen had kept him healthy this year. So nobody thought that was a good question until all of a sudden everybody started using it.
Okay,
yeah.
Seth, this is where I'm going to have an honest conversation with you, and I hate that I have to do this publicly with thousands and thousands of people listening, but it's a conversation that you and I have sort of had before where the last thing we need for you right now is to think that you are becoming some sort of hard-hitting journo. That's not good for the show. Like earlier this year where you got emotional about things, I'm going, Seth, don't you start getting human. That's not good for the show. You know what I mean?
Like, what was I getting emotional about?
Not emotional, but you were like, actually, you know, you were being understanding
I was being empathetic.
Yeah, empathetic, yeah.
And forgiving.
Right,
that's
right.
Still,
what is
know,
this salty discharge coming from my eyes? Those are tears. Stop it.
There is something about being too good of a human being. I don't know. I feel like Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen do a good job of it. They stay pretty human and like they're not out for blood and they're very successful.
Yeah, maybe. All right. Well, one assistant who is making a strong case to stick around for the next regime. We'll tell you who it is next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Here is Romeo Crennel. Yesterday on the job done by the Texans defense in the loss to the Colts.
Well, the second half was a good half. The biggest thing about the second half is we made stops kind of when we needed to, and particularly on the goal line down there, there was a tremendous stop there to give the offense the ball back. And so that's one of the things about this group of young men that played defense, you know, early in the season. It was rough, really rough, but they began to make progress as a unit and understanding particularly when they need to, quote, we call it bow up and get something done. And they were able to do that the second half, which gave us an opportunity to possibly win the game.
Seth, you look at this Texans staff, and most new head coaches come in and they clean pretty much everybody out. It's rare that you get more than one assistant, and I don't know how rare it is that at least one assistant sticks around from the previous staff, but a majority of the assistants, the staff of the previous head coach get let go. And as I look at the Texans staff, I don't know that anybody on the offensive side of the ball, because those are largely O'Brien guys, I think they're all going to be gone. I look at this staff and I go, the one guy who I feel like would be in demand around the league, where he would have another job pretty quickly, would be defensive coordinator Anthony Weaver. I think Anthony Weaver is well thought of around the league. You've pointed out and I think accurately, that Mike Vrabel might bring him in to be the defensive coordinator in Tennessee. The defense in Tennessee is not very good this year, and Vrabel has been...
Vrabel wanted to interview him last year.
Right, right. Yeah, Vrabel, he's got experience with Weaver, and Vrabel's been the one calling the defenses this year, and I would imagine that it's not making him a better head coach to have to handle defensive play calling duties on game day.
And I think that this is one of those situations. Now, if the Texans had remained as bad as they'd been in the first half of the season defensively, it would have been a much tougher sell to just say, well, look, he doesn't have much talent around him. Now it looks more credibly like he's doing the best he can with the talent that he has. And I still, like, I still find it funny. I understand why you would want to feel this way or why, because I don't want to, like, I'm not calling anybody a moron or anything. But I'll constantly, like, how do you have Philip Gaines out there? How do you have Vernon Hargraves out there? How do you have Eric Murray out there? It's like, because those are the guys on the roster. This is what he's working with. You can't get mad at Anthony Weaver
right.
for working with the guys with whom he's working. Now, how is he using them? Is he trusting Philip Gaines too much to be one-on-one or manned up all over the field with T.Y. Hilton? Sure. You can criticize in spots like that. But he still largely has to try to mix and match and make do with a lot of guys that are just subpar players in pass coverage. So that's and that's where, if I'm going to evaluate Anthony Weaver, some of the better work he's done is in learning when and where and how to disguise guys' weaknesses. I think he's done that with the linebackers to a certain degree. You know, Tyrell Adams has gotten better and smarter in coverage, but he also gets protected by Anthony Weaver somewhat. And they're trying to figure out how big of a bubble can you trust these guys with out on the field. Obviously it's all too little too late, but Weaver, I bet Weaver gets a job or a chance as a defensive coordinator somewhere next year. Because a big question would be, what if a new coach came in and wanted to retain Anthony Weaver, would most fans be cool with that, or are most people kind of keeping him at an arm's distance?
That's
right,
interesting.
Now?
What's the Q rating on Anthony Weaver? See, I don't view Weaver, even though O'Brien hired him, and he's been here for a majority of what was the O'Brien era, I don't view Weaver as a Bill O'Brien guy. For one, I don't think he's anything like Bill O'Brien, for one thing, just personality-wise.
Plus he's also... He and JJ are the guys that got in an argument with him on
yes.
the practice field and ultimately probably a part of leading to his departure. Like, not that that's what he is intentionally trying to do or anything, but things have come to a boiling point, and obviously if those reports are true, which I've heard from enough people that they are, it didn't seem like Weaver saw eye to eye with Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, some of it may just come down to who the head coach is, what the relationship is like, what the philosophical alignment is defensively with whoever they bring in. When we talk about Robert Saleh, it's not one of the first things that pops into my head, but we did bring it up last week. Robert Saleh was an assistant coach here that overlapped with Anthony Weaver's entire Texans career. Weaver was here 06, 07, 08. Saleh was a defensive quality control guy and I think an assistant linebackers coach. I forget what his titles were when he was here, but he's very familiar with Anthony Weaver, the player. There's a relationship there between those two. That would be logical dots to connect right there.
You know what, though? The only downside to that line of thinking is that I would suspect that Robert Saleh thinks D'Amico Ryans is a potential defensive coordinator. So D'Amico Ryans is in San Francisco. He's been Robert Saleh's linebackers coach for a couple years now, and I wonder if he would bring D'Amico Ryans with him. So then
cool
it comes down to
the
battle of former Texans defensive players as defensive coordinators.
Okay, so who do you take in a fist fight between your two former teammates, D'Amico Ryans and Anthony Weaver? D'Amico Ryans and Anthony Weaver.
In a fist fight?
Yes. A fight to the death.
In a fist fight.
The death where the winner gets the coveted role of defensive coordinator for the 2021 Houston Texans.
Sean, Anthony Weaver is half Samoan, and I will never in my entire life, no matter under any circumstance, get in a fist fight with a Samoan dude.
Yes.
So I'll give Anthony Weaver, who's got a size advantage on D'Amico. So D'Amico, if it turns into a wrestling match, I feel like I've got Anthony Weaver. You know, if it's like strict boxing, I would have to go with D'Amico just based on athleticism and everything.
I almost think the opposite based on one thing. Anthony Weaver's hands. Have you ever seen Anthony Weaver's hands? His fingers are jacked up, you know, from years of playing defensive line in the NFL. I don't know how you – let me see your hands real quick.
They're pristine.
Yeah.
I'm like a pianist is what I am.
Pianist, yes.
Look at my pianist hands.
Right.
They're pure and unblemished, like a picture of DeAndre Hopkins' social media.
How did your hands manage to stay so pristine playing defensive line in the league for a decade? Because here's why
I shied away from physical contact.
And you managed to stay in the league for a decade. It's amazing.
No, actually, which real – no, go ahead.
Because
I was self-deprecating there. I'd have to point out. Like, yeah. No. I racked up a lot of tackles. I don't know. I taped up my fingers A defensive lineman, Jeff Loggeman, my rookie year, taught me how to tape my fingers. And he said, listen, take care of your hands because you're going to dislocate your fingers a bunch and everything if you don't. And it adds up over time. He was all mangled. So I taped up between each knuckle on each hand every game and then wore gloves and taped my hands and everything.
Yeah.
So I took care not to get them messed up.
That's great advice. I mean, you're damn near a hand model, especially compared to Weaver, whose hands are so jacked up. And here's why I would take him in a fist fight. Part of it is he's basically got 10 daggers taped to his hands. They're called his digits. They are jagged and they're sharp. And I feel like, boy, if he got within reach of D'Amico Ryans, he would just start slicing his face with jagged knuckles.
You call hands like that natural shockers.
Hmm.
It just kind of the
that's what you
the
call
fingers
them?
Are kind of askew in the right proportion and ratio.
True. Yeah. No, Anthony Weaver probably spent very few nights alone before he was married because of the shapes of those fingers. Indeed. Back to the coaching part of this whole thing, and not the fist fight between D'Amico Ryans and Anthony Weaver. The Texans. This is something that the next head coach needs to fix on both sides of the ball. The slow starts. It's as predictable as it gets. And this is where I wish I could find a sports book that would allow me to wager on the Texans drive by drive. Because if there were a sports book where I could wager on the Texans going 3 and out on their opening drive, I would be killing it this year gambling. They've gone 3 and out 7 times in 12 games. They've gone they've punted 11 of 12 times, which was a real problem early in the year. Now it's an even bigger problem because the defense has this thing going on since the Green Bay game where they seem to give up a touchdown every game on the opening drive of the other team.
Yeah.
The only game they haven't given up a touchdown on the opening drive to the opposing team since Week 7 was against Cleveland where they gave up a field goal on the opening drive. They keep giving up points and they allow 9.1 yards per play, which for a little perspective is 3 yards worse than what the best offense in the league gets on a yards per play basis throughout the year, Kansas City. That's how bad they are on opening drives. And then for the rest of the game, Seth, they straighten things out. They're 5.3 yards per play. That would be a top 10 defense for the rest of the game in these games.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
And again, it's a testament to Weaver's ability to adjust and modify. And I thought yesterday they did a really good job of disguising some of the coverages on their blitzes. And confused Phillip Rivers in the second half. It's hard to confuse Phillip Rivers. Usually when you try to confuse Phillip Rivers, you end up tipping him off because he knows that something's a little off, but it's not often a normal kind of off, so he knows something's up. He's like Braveheart, the way he can sniff out an ambush. So I think they did some things and kind of did them on the fly to where they've been able to figure out what's the best way to use our inadequate talent in this football game.
Yeah.
And then the other thing too, and I want to be sure I do this at least a couple times a week. I really appreciate the fact that Zach Cunningham turned his season around after getting off to a really slow start.
Yeah.
He's come up and, you know, he and Terrell Adams making that key play down on the goal line on fourth down was just huge. And I'm happy that he did it. Somebody yesterday said, oh, somebody on Twitter has said, hey, he's leading the league in tackles. He didn't get off to a slow start. So I said, you sir, have not actually watched the entire season because he got off to a slow start.
He made
a lot of tackles, but he missed even more.
Yeah, he led the league in missed tackles, too. So, yeah. You know, you're right. I'm glad you pointed that out. That's an overpay that might actually end up working out that O'Brien did. Romeo Crennel probably had his honeymoon is over moment yesterday, at least as an in-game tactician. He's hard not to like, personally, but yesterday was a botch. This was not a decision where it was an unpopular decision that you could stick up for because of the analytics, like going for 2 against Tennessee to try to make it a 2-possession game, like going forward on 4th and goal against the Browns and then calling a quarterback draw. That was more on Tim Kelly than it was Romeo Crennel. the whole end of half sequence might have been what, if you would look back, that might have been what lost the game for the Texans yesterday, other than the Nick Martin snap at the end of the game. Texans are trailing 21-17. The Colts have the ball in Texans territory. They're getting ready to kick what was about, I think, a 42-yard field goal. They have two timeouts left. There's about a minute and a half to go in the half, and Romeo Crennel burns a timeout to ice the kicker in the second quarter with a minute and a half to go in a field goal that would have made it 24-17 with a whole half of football to play. He's icing the. I've never seen a coach ice a kicker in the second quarter of a football game unless there's no time left on the clock and you don't need those timeouts. You needed those timeouts. They needed those timeouts because what ended up happening after that, see, what happened was the Texans drove the ball down the field, got a goal-to-go situation, and because there were only 8 seconds left, Romeo Crennel felt as though he had to kick a field goal on third down, even though 8 seconds was clearly enough time to run a play, a throw into the end zone from where they were, because they had just done it twice in the previous two plays. It was a big cluster by Romeo Crennel. Here's his explanation.
Well, the clock, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of time, and so if you don't kick it there and something goes wrong on a play, then you don't have the opportunity to get the points on the board, all right? So we kicked it to get the points on the board. And then at the end of the half, I made a decision to try to ice the kicker. Probably wasn't the best decision to make, but I called the timeout on that one. And probably if we had had that timeout, we might have been able to use it to maybe to get a touchdown at the end of the half.
You know what? Can we play the other clip too? Because it's a better clip about him discussing this part.
The icing the kicker?
Yeah.
The one where he calls himself a doofus?
Well, yeah, but that's I didn't want to, for people that hadn't heard it, I didn't want them to.
Oh,
know
okay.
That.
Well, yeah. I just want to make sure we get the right cut. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's Romeo asked if he thinks it's effective to ice the kicker.
Sometimes. I mean, hey, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. If he had missed the field goal, then boom, I would have been a genius. But he made it, so I'm a doofus.
So this is where I think Romeo is misjudged or hasn't necessarily kept up with sports fans and the media. Yes, there is a whole lot in sports of, you know, if a play call works out, it's brilliant. If it doesn't work out, it was a dumb play call. We do that with trick plays a lot, right? Mm-hmm. If a trick play works out, it's brilliant. If it doesn't work out, I can't believe you're trying a trick play in that circumstance. When it comes to stuff like this, I think actually people have gotten pretty smart about saying things like, okay, you try to ice the kicker with a minute left and and your offense is going to get the ball back in the first half. Even if it had worked out, I think a lot of people would have said, like, what are you doing? Like, you still don't – you can never – this is the problem. You can never know for sure whether icing the kicker worked or did not work. You never know exactly why. How many times have we had to watch somebody – try to ice the kicker, like, right at the last moment, and the field goal kicker misses that kick, and then, all of a sudden, he makes the second one right. There's no rhyme or reason to it. There's very little evidence that it's effective at all. If it is effective, it's like a minuscule little margin, not enough to make a difference in anyone's situation. I think that even if that had worked out, people would have been like, it was still a dumb decision.
Yes.
Like, it was still, even if he missed that, it was still a dumb decision.
Yes. You burned a coupon to stop the clock on a drive where you could have gone down and gotten 7 points in a game that wound up being decided by one score. Like, I don't think it's out of line to say that that was one of the decisions that ultimately cost the Texans the game yesterday.
Sean, and this is why it's even worse. I think sometimes you look at this and you think, yeah, that's a bad decision. Think of it this way. That, honestly, that was no different, really, than if the Colts were trying a field goal at the end of the first quarter and you tried to ice it.
Right.
Like, it's just, as long as you have a possession left, a meaningful possession left in that game, it's a complete and total and 100% utter waste of a timeout, even if you think that there might be some advantage from icing the kicker. If it was the first drive of the game, it would be no less stupid to try to ice that kicker than what Romeo Crennel did at the end of the second quarter.
If I had to guess, I would say Romeo's looking at it going, well, there's only a minute and change left. You know, I see coaches get criticized for not using their timeouts all the time. If you got them, use them. Forgetting the fact that, oh, that's right, we're going to get the ball back, and these would be really valuable to have while we're on offense as well. Like, I really think that's what happened. All right, let's as we head towards the top of the hour, we're going to hand it over to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris at the top of the hour. They'll talk about the game yesterday, but let's do a few headlines before we get there.
Payne and Pendergast.
A doofus.
With today's headlines.
On second and goal, here's the snap. It's dropped. Deshaun. trying to fall for
it. Oh, no.
It's a fumble, and the Colts have it at the 10. The Texans botched a snap. They turn it over, and Indianapolis is going to win the game.
Man, it hurts. I'm tired of losing. Being so close over the years is just, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's tough.
Here's one thing we can put to bed, Seth. You know, you and I have talked about some of the X's and O's of this game. We just got done talking about Romeo, his use of timeouts. That stuff's all important because you hope that the next head coach makes better decisions. It would have been nice to beat the Colts because they're the Colts. The one thing that I think we can finally put to bed from yesterday, we can stop reading into Deshaun's body language after some of these losses where he's smiling and shaking hands with the opposing players, dapping guys up on the field, where there were plenty of people who called the post-game show while I'm hosting it, text this show, communicate with us on Twitter, that when the Texans were going through their 1-6 start, were livid with Deshaun that he wasn't as angry as they were, air quotes, about the Texans losing games. Can we put that to bed now? The dude was sitting on the bench after the game with a towel over his head sobbing about this loss. Deshaun is clearly emotionally, Joe fan, he is as emotionally invested as you are, this just in the Texans' wins and losses this year.
I don't get as worked up about that stuff. I understand why some people do. I get it. I've known too many players that just everybody's wired differently.
Yeah.
And some guys just don't show certain emotions publicly that they might express privately or in the locker room. I do think one of the more encouraging things to me is I don't need Deshaun Watson to be like a Peyton Manning type taskmaster where he berates his own players. Sean, I used to be out on the field sometimes, and frankly, I would start to feel like I might need to take it easy on this poor offensive lineman because of the mean things that Peyton Manning had said to him. It was embarrassing for these guys.
Him.
The way that Peyton Manning would just take away their manhood from them and just treat them like disobedient dogs.
Oh,
it was
God.
Awful. I was joking about taking it easy on him, but still, in the first series of the second half, Deshaun tried to throw to Jordan Akins on the right sideline. I couldn't tell who it was. There was another receiver who was covered up a little bit shallower. And I couldn't tell if Deshaun, it looked like the ball would have sailed out of bounds for Jordan Akins to catch it. So I think he was upset with the other receiver and perhaps an adjustment he did or didn't make on the route. But he looked a little bit like Peyton Manning. It was because sometimes Deshaun will do that little thing where he mimes out what should have happened and he's got a kind of a smile on his face. This time he looked flat out disgusted. That's the right balance. There does need to be a certain level of your quarterback getting really peeved at a guy making the wrong move. You don't have to be a jerk all the time about it or anything, but the Pat McAfee tells a story about it was one of the young tight ends for the Colts. He tried to one-hand a ball when he could have caught it with two hands, and he dropped it.
Oh, boy.
And he came back to the huddle, and Manning just pointed at the sideline, told him to get out. So he went to the sideline, and they're like, what are you doing? You get back in there. So he started to come back in, and Peyton looked over at the sideline and pointed again and just said, get out.
I wish he would remember which game it was. I'd go back and watch it on Game Pass. That's beautiful.
I'll send you the clip of who the player was. And then the kid just sat on the bench the rest of the game. Like Peyton Manning benched this kid because he tried to one hand a ball that he could have caught with two hands. And I think there's a right amount of that. Like Deshaun's personality is not the same as Peyton Manning's personality, but maybe go to a Drew Brees level of taskmaster.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be a tyrant, but there has to be sometimes guys got to feel genuinely bad about what they did.
Yeah, I don't mind. I didn't mind seeing that. I know the play you're talking about. Didn't mind seeing that at all from Deshaun for sure. I was thinking about this yesterday, Seth. This is one maybe area where the Texans being 4-7 helps a little bit right now. Is that, yeah, it sucked the way they lost, and this has been a season that's been, it's been hard for everybody to watch the Texans go 4-8 now. Can you imagine if they lost the game that way yesterday and they were 7-4 instead of 4-7?
Oh,
like if we were looking at the standings this morning, 7-5 right now, 7-5 right now is not good enough to be in the playoffs in the AFC. The Colts, who beat you yesterday, are the 7th seed in an expanded playoff. They are the 7th seed with an 8-4 record in the AFC. That's how top-heavy the AFC is right now. The Colts are the last team in at 8-4. Can you imagine if that game yesterday is why you would have to sit here for at least another week sitting outside the playoffs because Nick Martin couldn't snap a ball at Deshaun Watson's chest?
Yeah.
He snapped it at his left shin.
One of the big reasons you're not 7-4, Sean, is that Nick Martin also doesn't block people all that well,
right,
including Grover Stewart on that very play, where the bad snap was one thing, but Nick Martin whiffing completely and totally and 100% whiffing on his block. Who, mind you, Grover Stewart is not one of the best defensive linemen in football the way DeForest Buckner is. Nick Martin is the fourth highest paid center in football.
Yes.
That's just too many times where he's getting whooped in that game by Grover Stewart. That's just, he's not good enough. He's got to get better. He's capable of more. The next offensive line coach needs to get that out of him.
Right.
Let's flip to the Rockets here real quick. We have not talked much about James Harden. We haven't talked about him at all today. James Harden still has not reported to the Rockets. The NBA was encouraging guys to stay at home as camp was coming up, you know, adhere to the protocols, try to isolate as best you can. New season coming up. You're not in a bubble anymore. James Harden was in Atlanta celebrating Lil Baby's birthday over the weekend. That's what he was doing.
Is that where, because he was in Atlanta and Las Vegas. So the Lil Baby birthday party was in Atlanta?
Yes.
I just assumed that was in Las Vegas.
That was Atlanta was what I read. Seth,
yeah.
He wasn't in Houston.
It was...
He
was giving Lil Baby a $300,000.
Yes! God, I need richer friends is what I need. Give me $100,000 for my birthday.
I was all over the place. I was thinking about going on Twitter and defending James Harden and also tagging my own birthday along with it. You're like, I, Seth Payne,
yeah,
who was born on February 12th, hereby defend James Harden's gift-giving and travel tactics.
We say all that to say that James Harden, who was supposed to be at Toyota Center for at least an individual workout yesterday, he's not allowed around the team because he needs to pass the COVID protocols, still had not reported to the team. The expectation is he will soon, but he has not yet. Here is new head coach Steven Silas explaining James Harden's absence.
He didn't take place in today's practice. Due to the NBA protocol, he is not able to practice with the rest of the team, but we're expecting him for an individual workout sometime this evening.
Now, this got a lot of run as well. Here's John Wall, one of James Harden's newest teammates, traded here for Russell Westbrook, former All-Star point guard. John Wall met with the media yesterday. He said he's talked to James Harden.
Me and James had a great talk since I've been traded here. And, we've been friends way before this. And, you know, through what's going on right now, you know, it's because of the testing protocol and things like that. We're going to figure out what's the best decision when you want to get here and be here. And we've been on the same page since I've been traded here.
I got such mixed feelings about James Harden right now, Seth. Probably something we need more time to dig into. But I want the Rockets to win. They're a better team with James Harden. So from that standpoint, I want James here. But I'm kind of disgusted with James Harden, if you want to know the truth. You know, they bent over backwards for him, and now he's demanding a trade to the team of his choice, Brooklyn, and now he's just flouting the NBA protocols. Like, I'll go to Atlanta and celebrate with Lil Baby.
We got to have Russell Westbrook.
Right.
Oh, it's not working out with Russell Westbrook. I want to go somewhere else, please. Oh, no, I cannot be bothered with these COVID protocols.
Yeah, I need therapy.
Yeah, man. I'm just tired of them. Tired.
Okay,
tired.
Good. Yeah, you got to talk me into that place where I just don't want him here anymore.
We'll get back. I mean, we'll be back. You know what I'm tired of and I'm not going to do anymore any longer?
What's that?
I'm not going to waste any time defending him to various people.
Yes.
Like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm going to, all right, the gather step, whatever. The flopping, okay, cool, whatever.
Yeah. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you and maybe a $300,000 Dior bag.
From your lips to God's ears, yeah.
Feb 12, same as Abraham Lincoln.
Hand it over to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. They got you next here on a Texans Monday.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.